Hello and welcome to this week's Ukraine Calling program. I'm Oksana Smerichuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, bringing you a roundup of the weekly news, culture and some music. Later in the show, we'll bring you a feature interview with a real warrior, Pavlo Mamontov. He fought in a volunteer battalion in eastern Ukraine and is heading out to compete in the Invictus Games in Toronto, where President Poroshenko will be in attendance. It's a Paralympic-type sporting event for war veterans. But first, as always, the news. Ukraine's President Poroshenko was in New York this week. He addressed the United Nations General Assembly on Wednesday the 20th. The focus of his speech was the potential UN peacekeeping mission to Ukraine, and he insisted that the entire war zone be included and that Russia not be part of the mission. He said that peacekeepers should be impartial and that there's no place for the aggressor's personnel. Poroshenko also called for a new international group on the Crimea situation. He then went on to address other key international issues, like condemning North Korea's nuclear missile launches, reiterating Ukraine's commitment to the Paris climate deal. And he asked for international recognition of the Stalin-instigated artificial famine in Soviet Ukraine 1932-33, known as the Holodomor, which is recognized as a genocide. We'll post a link to the entire speech on our website. During his visit, Poroshenko also met with U.S. President Donald Trump, U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres, and American business leaders. After New York, President Poroshenko heads to Canada for a two-day working visit on the 22nd and 23rd of September. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced that the two of them would meet on the margins of the Invictus Games to discuss security and, to use Trudeau's words, to discuss how to strengthen the already robust security and people-to-people connections between Canada and Ukraine. Ukraine is one of the 17 countries that will be sending a team to this year's Invictus Games, including the future guest on our show this week, Pavlo Mamontov. The international event was created by Britain's Prince Harry in 2014. It is an international adaptive sportive event for the wounded, ill and injured, active duty and veteran service members. This year, the games are being held in Toronto, September 23rd to the 30th, and you can meet the rest of the team and learn more about the games in the links we'll post on our website. This Monday, on the 18th of September, the U.S. Senate passed a $700 billion U.S. dollar defense policy bill. This is more money that President Trump had asked for and Senator McCain had lobbied for. The 1,215-page document sets out policy and funding for a diverse range of defense-related issues. According to the New York Times, it authorizes $500 million to provide security assistance, including weapons, to Ukraine, $100 million to help Baltic nations deter Russian aggression. The military situation on the front line in the Donbas remained unchanged over the last week. The ceasefire regime has been constantly interrupted by low-scale armed collisions on different areas of the front. As a result of those collisions, one Ukrainian serviceman was killed and seven wounded. Meanwhile, from September the 14th to September the 20th, Russia and Belarus were conducting massive military drills called Zapad 2017. Those drills caused some concerns among military and political officials of neighboring countries. The Ukrainian Air Force, for instance, was put on alert and was conducting a constant patrol of the border in coordination with the State Border Guard services. As of now, however, the drills have ended without bringing immediate visible threats to neighboring countries. According to Radio Liberty, Radio Free Europe's show called Crimean Realities, the home of Renat Parlamov was searched on the morning of the 13th of September. Some documents and his computer were confiscated. He was then transferred to Simferopol for questioning, apparently for his religious activities. When released the following day, he described to his lawyer, Emil Kurbedinov, how he'd been tortured during questioning. This week, Parlamov's mother, Park His was also summoned for questioning by the FSB, Russia's security services. And journalist Mykola Semenar is due to be sentenced in Simferopol on Friday, the 22nd of September. In his articles, he wrote that, according to international law, Crimea does not belong to Russia. For that, he was charged with public calls for actions violating territorial integrity under Article 280.1 of the Russian Criminal Code. The prosecutor is demanding a 3-year suspended sentence. Semenar published a statement in his own defense, saying that the court was violating the Russian constitution since Article 29 guarantees the rights of citizens to an opinion and Article 52 forbids restrictions of this right. Ukraine raised $3 billion in bonds on Monday, the 10th of September. This was the first sovereign bond issue since 2015 when the country restructured its debt. The IMF had demanded that Ukraine return to the international money market by selling hard currency bonds. Ukraine's President Poroshenko hailed this as a huge success, saying that never before has Ukraine raised such a sum, never has it raised it under a 15-year maturity. This is an unbelievably positive assessment by investors of the reform program. Some pro-reform activists greeted the news with caution, fearing this might make Ukraine's government less inclined to meet IMF demands. Adrian Karatnitsky of the Atlantic Council commented that the private sector likes what it sees on reforms in Ukraine, unlike the IMF, which likes to press forward with laundry lists of sometimes sensible and sometimes insensible and politically insensitive demands. Renaming continues in Kyiv. A metro station in Kyiv got a new name this week. The stop that used to be called Petriuka is now called Pochayna. When it was opened back in 1980, it was named after a Communist Party official, Grigory Petrovsky. A petition by Kievites got the name changed to a local river, a tributary that flows into the Dnipro. The Kiev City Council also approved another petition. What was called the Moscow Bridge is now the North Bridge. Well, here we are once again. It's Oksana Smerechuk in the interview studio, and today I'd like you to meet an Invictus warrior. What makes a person into an Invictus Games warrior? This week, the 2017 Invictus Games are starting, so they'll be taking place from the 23rd to the 30th of September in Toronto, Canada. And this is the first time that Ukraine is participating and has been invited to send a team. Lately, we've been seeing lots of stories in the media about Ukraine's Invictus warriors as the excitement builds and Ukrainians gear up to follow the success of their men and women veterans at the Games in Toronto. So this past week, the whole Ukrainian Invictus team has been at a number of send-off ceremonies. For example, there was one yesterday with representatives of the government and major sponsors coming to wish the competitors all the best. Even the Ministry of Defense came out to congratulate people, to hand out awards, and also with the Vice Premier for Euro-Atlantic Integration. So lots of media attention. Now, I'm speaking to someone for whom the next week will be the opportunity to show the results of lots of hard work. With me in the studio, I have Pavlo Mamontov, who is an Invictus Games competitor. So, welcome. Now, as we know, Invictus Games competitors are all veterans of the armed forces or current members of the armed forces who have been wounded while in the line of duty or in action. So it's not strictly this definition in your case. So for one thing, Pavlo, you were a volunteer in a volunteer battalion. And also, you know, remember when we first met, you said to me that 4 years ago, you never would have imagined yourself as in the army. You weren't that type of person. So how did it all start?
Yes, it's true. Before war, me and army, it was something
not on speaking terms.
Unbelievable, yes. And when war coming, I should go because I'm Ukrainian. It's my country, and I wanna live here. My family live here, and I wanna in the future my kids live here too. And it's like my second mother who gave me a life. It's neat.
And did you just go and join the volunteer battalion right away, or were you on Maidan?
Yes, before war I was in Maidan, and I had my first wounded from police in Maidan. And after Maidan I wanted go to war. But for me it was a big problem because I had an experience in military some. And volunteer battalion was for me a good opportunity mm-hmm. in that time.
So did your family know that you were, did you tell them that that you were going to the front lines?
Well, my mother, I think, know about this because I told she about war and told if war coming to our country, I go. It was before war.
So then it's obviously a very emotional decision. Or where did you see action? Where did you end up on the front lines?
So I was in Sector M at Mariupol area. And this was our sector, our battalion. In. Mm-hmm. Now it's a regiment, and still our regiment still here.
And when was this?
It was start 2015.
And so then, did you continue? Were you in the with the Azov battalion when you were wounded?
I came back after wounded, not for a long time. After I had a good opportunity to study and other opportunity, and this was for me more interesting because war, it was another war after Minsk document. And
So tell me, where were you wounded? How did you, how did that happen?
It was like an artillery duel. I was with our command mortar command, and it was mortar ammo. And broke my bones, yes, on hand.
Oh, in your arm, in your forearm.
Yes, in arm, yes, and bones on my finger too. And I was without meat, without skin.
There was no flesh.
It yes, was no just, flesh, yes.
It was just bone?
No, in some place, yes. And then I saw in some place my bones, yes.
And what happened? Were you conscious or at the time?
I didn't lose my
consciousness.
Mind. Yes, and I remember I stand up and.
Were you taken to a hospital immediately?
It was a very long time because many people near me was wounded and died. Two men died, and I stand up, and I understood that now I can something do, and I should do something because other people are busy, helped another guys, and after that, yes, was to in this one day I had operation and had to hospital another.
Oh, all in one day?
Hard. Yes, it was one day, yes.
Good. Did your family know about this?
Yes, and that day I remember I called my mother. I found one telephone, one guy, and called my mother. My mother said, I know about your situation. And I said, I wanted to say that I just broke my hand, nothing special. But my mother knows the situation.
I know. So then after this one operation, were you able then to function normally, to go back to work? You came back to Kyiv, I assume.
No, after my first operation, I had 3 months in another city, in hospital. I had maybe seven or six operations. After this operation, after 3 months, I just came back to my home. But in the hospital, in this hospital, with my girl, we thought about our marriage. And when I came back after operation in Kyiv, in the next day after operation, I went to our government yes office, and we married, yes, with my wife.
That's a nice story.
Yeah.
And so then, what were your plans then? Were you just prepared to go back to work, back to civilian life?
Maybe my girl and my wife in the future, and help me with this. After that, some special people in all my moments in life, I had really good people in my life way. And I had one organization, it's Psychological Adaptation organization.
That were helping you.
Yes, mm-hmm. it's helped me. And after that, I had study in good, it was good space. It's a good new people, new stories.
So you were able to go and study?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I come and study in Ukrainian Catholic University, public administration. It was very, very cool. After that, work.
You know. So how did you, but that's a private university that has fees, tuition fees. It's not free. How did you manage that?
It's very... it's not cheap university, yes, but it's very cool level university, and I wanted to have study there. And one fund, it's a Western Enterprise, it's American fund, helped me and my friends, Warrior Two. And we for free now have studied this university.
Mm-hmm. So then what made you decide to go, and how did you hear about the Invictus Games?
First of all, it was before that Ukraine sent application. My volunteer called me, I remember, and said, look at this, this website. This was Invictus Games website, and I remember I saw some videos from another competition, and it was I remember I maybe crying at this time. I cried at this time because it was a very emotional moment. And
this meant something for you.
Yes, it's something I don't have a word to explain this. And I remember the organizator said me, write your motto, maybe motto.
Your motivation? List.
Yes, what for you, it's Invictus, maybe. Could you... this competition in Ukraine or Ukraine in this competition.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I wrote this list, and I forgot about this. But after that, people say me, oh, okay, Invictus Games, Ukraine first time in this competition. Yes.
And you got in, because apparently 122 veterans applied to be a competitor for the Ukrainian team, and only 30 were accepted. So I guess you must have proven yourself in the initial selection competition. And what sports are you competing in?
My sport, it's cycling and rowing.
Did you find that when you started working with the coaches, did you find it was hard? Are you naturally a sporty person?
Well, I had some experience before. It was like at ski. It white tie, tie box, and this is some kind of tourism. I'm like a junior instructor.
Like through mountains or
yes,
wild,
like this. And I like a junior officer, a junior instructor tourism. And but all this I did for my myself, for my fun. It's not for some competition, not for medals, not for something. It was higher, this.
Mm-hmm. So what does the Invictus Games mean for you? What is your purpose in being, in participating?
For me, it's emotion. For me, it's in the future, nice meeting. I have. It's a new experience. It's higher, yes. It's higher. This is a medal. It's higher. This is a piece of metal.
So, what do you hope to do in Toronto?
Meeting with Ukrainian diaspora, with another guys who like we, who had experience like we, and know, I want to know point of problems. This is people and they experience. It's interesting all for us.
Mm-hmm. What in your experience? Do you think the Invictus Games can influence people? Do you think they can, say, motivate?
Yes, it's, for example, like me, when I, in hard time, when I, it's hard trainings and you want to finish that, and you see another guys who maybe without legs or without head, and this is guys hard work, and for and you think for yourself, guy, hard work for this is guys and for you, it's possible. It's for me, it's like an example for other people, not for just warrior, not for just a wounded warrior. It's an example.
Right. So what are your plans then for the future?
Finish my study, maybe some work in public administration, I don't know. Maybe with my wife, some business, some cafe.
That'd be nice.
Yes, it's interesting.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Pavlon, for coming in to talk with us. I admire your spirit in going ahead. And I wish you and your fellow competitors, I wish you all the luck, all the best of luck in the games.
Thank you.
Culture. We have two exhibits to tell you about this week. One is the largest or perhaps most complete collection of Alahorska's works in the Dukat Gallery on Reytarska Street in Kyiv. Horska was an artist and activist in the 1960s. She used her art for political as well as artistic statements and was involved in the Ukrainian cultural movement of the 1960s. At age 41, she was killed just outside of Kyiv. That was in 1970. Some report that she was bludgeoned to death by the KGB. Her funeral turned into a mass protest, which is not a common occurrence in the USSR. Although some of her work was destroyed by the Soviet authorities, other pieces survived. Her paintings are part of the permanent exhibit at the Ukrainian National Museum of Art. But this large collection is now on display until the beginning of October. And another exhibit opened in Kyiv this week, a retrospective of the artist Anatoly Kolomeitz called Povernenia, which means return. It opened at the Taras Shevchenko Museum and is the first exhibit of the artist who was forced to leave Ukraine during World War II and then created his art in the USA. In music, there's a new list of top 10 new Ukrainian songs that came out this week in Lviv. One of them is by a band called Teoria Prostoru, which would translate as The Theory of Space. They released their interpretation of a poem by the famous writer Pavlo Techina from 1917. Des nadchodila vesna, spring was coming somewhere. And this is something from his most famous poetry collection called Sunny Clarinets. The video appeared on the 16th of September to mark the 50th anniversary of the day the poet passed away. It was filmed in Tichenna's former apartment in central Kiev, which is now a museum. And you may know someone here because Hromadske Radio's director, Andriy Kulikov, plays Tichenna in the video. You can listen to it here, and we'll post a link to the video to our website, as well as the other 9 songs on the list.
Надходила весна, я сказав їй, ти весна, з зокрилими губками у куточках на вустах. Щось пурхнуло й усмішками і потонуло у душі. Наливалися жита, я сказав їй, золота. Нівно брівоньки зламалися, одвернулася і пішла. Тільки довго оглядалася, немов би кликала, йди. Йди. Почали тумани йти, я сказав, не любиш ти. Стала, глянула, промовила, от й осінь вже прийшла. Так любить, кажи, та швидше ж, бо блиснув сміх її, мов кинджал. Кинджал, кинджал. Зажурись під снігом гай, я сказав їй, що ж прощай. Враз сердечним теплим сяйвом щось їй бризнуло з очей. Сизокрилими голубками на моїх вона вустах. Вустах. Вона в устах.
Ukraine Calling will be back next week with a new show for you. To join our mailing list, please write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org or just write and let us know what you think. I'm Oksana Smirichuk for Hromadske Radio. Thanks so much for listening.